Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends, and welcome to this Women's World Cup edition of The Spread presented by the Red Light Sports Network. I am your host, J.A., the Managing Director and co-founder of CoverThatSpread.com. You guys can check out some of the other videos and podcasts on the RedLightSportsNetwork.com website. And while you're there, be sure to check out the Million Dollar Ramble and find out what you can do to help put an end to domestic abuse. On the show today, like always, I have the Catracho. How is it going, my man?
Everything is great. Looking forward to discussing some Women's World Cup and some Copa America going down in South America today.
Now, just before we get into the whole gambling aspect of this, what is your feeling on the women playing on turf? Because I know it's a big deal that the men always have grass. They always have premier grass to play on. What's your thoughts on this?
So I've seen a lot of youth soccer on turf, and, I mean, it plays a lot differently. It's not as forgiving of a surface. You know, the ball isn't going to play as softly. It's going to be a lot more bouncing around. And just judging from the games that I have watched and even from listening to some of the players such as Abby Wambach, from the U.S., you know, they're not really sacrificing their bodies the same way just because of the fact that the ground is so hard. So I know it makes a difference, but I wouldn't necessarily say it makes a huge difference because I've never played on it myself, but just judging from watching, the game is a lot faster on AstroTurf.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think we're pretty familiar with that just from watching it with other sports as well. For those of you who have not watched a lot of soccer, so if this is the first time you're really getting a good look at it, you know, just like every other sport, it is going to play a little faster. So, but today's show, we are going to talk about, like you said, Women's World Cup. We're going to talk about some of the other soccer leagues as well. We're going to do a little bit of checking in on how the NHL and NBA finals wrapped up, and we are going to get into another division of the NFL for this season. So just remember, guys, if you have any questions regarding the legality of gambling, please consult your local and state legislative offices and find out if it is okay or not for online wagering. If it is, however, be sure to gamble responsibly and always be sure to square up with Uncle Sam on April 15th. You guys can get in touch with the show, this show, a couple different ways. You can send me an email to spread@coverthatspread.com. You can find Catracho on Twitter @TheCatracho. You can find me @TheSpreadJA. And you can also find Cover That Spread @CoverThatSpread, spelled SPRD. So let's get into this. What were your plays today for the Women's World Cup? I know we put them up there. One or two of them has already gone down. So what can the listeners get in on right now? And, you know, where should their money be going?
Okay, so there were four games today, finishing up the last two groups to, you know, set up the knockout stage. We had Mexico going up against France. We had taken Mexico at +1.5 heading into the game. They got a drubbing today. France just came out, you know, playing for their life because they weren't guaranteed a spot in the next round and beat Mexico 5-0. It was 3-0 within the first 13 minutes of the game. That was a bad play on my part, but that was just one of the four. The other play, we had Colombia, which was the leader of the group, going up against England, and they also lost. So far, not a great way to start the day, but there are still two more games that are going to be starting at 7 Eastern that you can still get in on. One of the games involves South Korea. I like South Korea, so I'm taking the money line on them, as well as Brazil versus Costa Rica, going with under 2.5. Brazil have already secured their spot, winning their first two games, so they don't really need to score a lot of points today. They're known for slowing down the pace of the game and kind of taking their time from past World Cups and other tournaments such as the Olympics. Costa Rica is not a very strong side. They have put some goals in against some weaker teams during the World Cup, but I think that one will be under 2.5. So those are the other two plays you can get in on for the Women's World Cup today.
Now, England had a chance to win their bracket. Is that correct?
Yes, they did. They were ahead on goal differential, if I'm not mistaken, over France. But with France scoring those 5 goals, I believe France was able to make it up and possibly even win that. Yeah, France won it on goal differential. So they had a goal differential of 4, and England ended up with a goal differential of 1.
Okay. Now, and one more thing. Were those two games going on at the same time, where they couldn't be, you know, scoreboard watching?
Yes. So the way that FIFA has set it up and the other tournaments that are also sanctioned by FIFA around the world, on the last day of the group stage, they will have the teams from that group play at the same time, so that way no one can watch the scoreboard and, you know, try to relax if they need to or whatever you want to call it. I'm sure they get updates at halftime. So England probably knew that France was already up 3-0 at halftime. You know, they might have come out and tried to play a little harder, but just winning that game secured them a spot in the second round.
All right. Yeah, I was wondering about that, because I saw those when those games were going on. I wasn't sure if that was planned. You know, you never know what to make with the international soccer tournament. With all of the issues, not issues, but with everything that's gone on recently here with FIFA and the way that everything has gone down, in your opinion, and this could be from a gambler's standpoint, this could be just from a fan standpoint, where do all the FIFA sanctions and everything that's gone down over the last month or so, how does that affect you watching soccer?
So a lot of the nations that were involved in the sanctions against FIFA were from Central and South America, as well as some in the Middle East. The Middle East isn't very well represented, but it has more to do with the men's side than the women's side. So for me, it doesn't really play any part in, you know, wagering on any of these games. It would be more of a wagering on the men's World Cup, especially in the future with the 2018 and 2022 World Cups. But I don't think it would change, you know, what exactly is going on with the play. It has a lot more to do with where the tournaments are staged.
And now that there's a couple of job openings over there, are you going to be applying to any positions within the organization?
You know, they need some very strong compliance individuals, so it wouldn't be a bad gig. So maybe we'll look into something like that in the near future.
It might not be a bad thing to do. I'm sure that's a hot topic over there these days, and you could probably, really promote yourself pretty well because of that. So let's do a little bit of recap with the NHL finals. Playoffs came and went. I thought it was a phenomenal final series. I thought both of the conference championship series were very good as well. You know, we've been in a very good state of hockey the last few years as Chicago fans. And, you know, even in the gambling world, everything that is taking place over the last 3 or 4 weeks now with the hockey playoffs that's been happening, I really like it. I think the energy level is high. You know, you're talking about some real phenomenal series that were taking place. How are you approaching, and I know it's kind of tough being both Chicago guys, so how are you really approaching your betting in the Stanley Cup Finals? I know you had said Blackhawks in six. I think I said Blackhawks in five a few weeks ago. I was joking around since I'm in Tampa and telling everyone it was going to be Blackhawks in four, but that was mostly just to piss everybody off. So, you know, where, how did you approach everything? How did you come out at the end?
So I did, I think, bet on maybe three of the games individually, but I did take out that Blackhawks winning the series 4-2. I forgot to place the second bet on it being a 6-game series, which would have doubled it down, but I came out on top. I did have the Blackhawks losing the first game, which was unfortunate. And then I bet on the second game as well, thinking that the Blackhawks would steal 2 games in Tampa, which they did not. So, you know, I lost the bet on the first 2 games there. I know you had said that you were picking the Blackhawks to win the first one due to all the travel, which is, you know, one that we disagreed on, but that was a good play that you made and won that one. And then I think I bet on game 3 with them winning. So that was great. Game 6, I know we had talked a little bit about as well, with it being under 5 goals. So that was a great play as well. You know, finishing 2-0. I figured that Tampa just wasn't going to put up a lot of points or a lot of goals, you know, into the net in that game. And the Blackhawks were so good in closeout games, 9-0 under Quenneville. So I just realized that, you know, the Blackhawks were going to get it done when it mattered most.
That was an incredible stat when they flashed that one. You know, to think about a guy being perfect in closeout games, in game 6 when they have the chance to close out. I mean, that is a really – really good coach right there that the Blackhawks have in Joel Quenneville. So I was very impressed with that. I had the Blackhawks winning game 1. I just kind of felt like they were going to just be a little better, be in a better position. Game 2, I bet the over, actually. I thought it was going to be a high-scoring game after game 1 wasn't, knowing what both offenses were, and it was 5 or 5.5 for the total, and they went up to 7. I think it was 4-3 in that game. I avoided betting game 3 because the Blackhawks were at home and they were kind of heavy favorites, so I passed on that one. And then just a couple of light bets on the Hawks in games 5 and again in game 6. So, you know, I felt good going with them. I had a feeling. I love that both the NHL final and the NBA final pretty much went the same way. The favorites won in 6, and they both won game 1, lost 2-3, and then won 3 straight to close it out. I don't remember that ever happening before. And if the Blackhawks would have had home ice, it would have been an exact mirror image of what the Warriors did over in the NBA. But, you know, I felt, getting back to hockey, not that I didn't feel that Tampa was good enough to win this, but they just kind of were a little too slow. I shouldn't say slow. They didn't dominate as much as I felt they should have throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs. And the Blackhawks had a real easy route to get into the finals. But when you really look at Tampa, they took them a couple extra games. Even though everyone talks about how good of an offensive team they are and how high scoring they are, which they were. I mean, they were, I think, the top-scoring team during the regular season. They had, well, I think it was a half goal per game less than the Blackhawks over the playoffs, and they had about 3 extra games on the Hawks as well. So you're talking about a very fast style of play, a very active style of play, and you played 3 extra games. You know, that definitely showed at certain points in the series when they had good opportunities that they weren't able to capitalize on. Stamkos just didn't quite look like the same player as he did earlier in the playoffs. he looked very fatigued. You know, then you get the Bishop injury, you get everything else that kind of went down for Tampa, and, you know, they were they just kind of ran out of gas. You know, I think that's the best way to put it, because the types of opportunities that the Blackhawks gave them were ones that they would have been cashing in on during the regular season. So, you know, hats off to them. They definitely played a great series, just wasn't good enough. You know, they ran into the wrong team at the wrong time. So that's kind of what went down there. Are you going to the rallies tomorrow?
I am going to be doing my best to get out there. I will be in the city tomorrow, so there is a good possibility that I will see some of the parade route, maybe even sneak over around the Soldier Field area to see the end of it. But definitely if I do, there will be some pictures that get tweeted out, so be on the lookout for that.
All right, we definitely will. I heard that they sold out Soldier Field in roughly an hour, and I don't know if, I mean, part of me says it'd be stupid if they were selling, like, luxury boxes there, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they were. So, you know, that's, you know, if you're talking another 50 to 60,000 people showing up for a rally, that's pretty impressive. I know a lot of people showed up for the first two parades. So, you know, it's a pretty big deal, you know, and they take their parades and they take their sport rallies seriously in that city. So it's good to see that they're doing. I've also, I think I was checking on StubHub earlier, and you can actually, there's people scalping tickets for like $100 already. I mean, that's pretty crazy. Would you pay $100 just to get into Soldier Field for that rally?
I would not, especially since this is the third time within the last, you know, 5 years. And, you know, with them probably having the same roster minus one or two guys coming back next year and in the years to come, I don't believe that this will be the last time we see a Blackhawks parade rally. So, you know, maybe next year I'll try to get into something like that, but I'm not going to be paying $100 for a resale ticket.
yeah, you can turn that $100 into $150 tomorrow night, so why even bother? I did go to the Bulls rally in 98. That was in Grant Park, and that was a lot of people in there. That was a lot of fun, though, and it's kind of cool because it was the last year that the Bulls won. The last year with Jordan, you know, there was just so much that kind of came to an end right there. So it was nice going to the rally and doing that whole thing. So on to the NBA. You had Warriors in six. I think I said Warriors in five, if I'm not mistaken. Take us through that series. Take us through your betting in the series.
Yeah, so I figured it was time for Cleveland's run to end. And I know we had discussed it that the reason I went with six was due to the LeBron James factor and then being able to sneak out two wins. It kind of, as we were saying earlier, mirrored the NHL series where, you know, Cleveland was hot. Basically, they were beating teams, you know, with an undermanned roster. There's no reason that the Bulls really lost their series, you know, being up two games to one. And then, of course, Atlanta, you know, had some injuries of their own, so Cleveland was able to get by them. But Golden State just had too much. You know, they were too fast. We said that if they went to a small ball type of lineup that, you know, it was going to wreak havoc on Cleveland, and it really did, you know, because their only area where they were really dominant was inside with Mozgov and Thompson. You know, missing those guys like Love and Irving, it really – you know, took its toll on LeBron with him having to do just way too much. And Golden State just had all those guys that can stretch the floor. You know, they can go 7-8 deep. You know, even when they took Bogut out of the lineup and allowed themselves to get, you know, out-rebounded, you know, and really not get too much inside. They were just draining the three-pointers, getting out on that fast break and making things happen. So that's where I looked at it the most. I know we had a couple games that we had discussed betting on individually with either Golden State covering, especially last night. I know we had discussed, you know, Golden State, I think it was -4, -4.5 heading into the game, as well as the over. And, you know, those two things hit, obviously, in the end because Cleveland was throwing up some garbage shots with J.R. Smith. But it was a good series.
He was hitting garbage shots.
So you throw them off.
That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really good series. I'm glad to see Golden State win, and I'm glad that my bets, you know, and my predictions came to fruition in that series.
You know, it's funny with basketball, and I felt like Golden State was like this a lot. They'd be big favorites, and a lot of people would be betting them, and then they would either lose or they would, or game would stay a little closer than expected, and so they wouldn't cover. And then the next game would be like the flipped line, or, you know, after a couple of misses, you know, they'd have a flipped line that it'd be like, you know, Golden State -1 or Golden State -4 or something like that. And then they'd start blowing people out. And I kind of took that philosophy in this series. I really liked a lot of things that they were doing, although early on in the series, you know, they just weren't quite hitting the shots. And you could tell it was there. Like, even when LeBron was putting up 40, when LeBron was putting up triple-doubles, you just had a feeling that it wasn't going to be enough, because it just seemed like he was doing way too much already, and it couldn't sustain that level for 7 games. Now, he did, I think, sustain playing at that level, but he wasn't getting that same help from the rest of the supporting cast. And that was the, you know, that was the downfall of them. You can make some arguments right now that if they don't trade for Kevin Love and if they keep Andrew Wiggins on that roster, that they would have been a better team come February, March, April, and into the playoffs. So, you know, as good as they were, I don't know that Kevin Love trade really was that good for the organization. And right now, if I'm the general manager, if I'm running the Cavaliers, I don't think I'm, you know, it's a real tough decision. Do you let LeBron James make the decisions for your organization, and you let him say, yes, I want this player, no, I don't want that player, when Kevin Love was his guy? And that was a total failure. You know, when you think about him, getting him in there, saying, you know, he's trade away Andrew Wiggins, they make the deal, and then he doesn't get along with Love, and they have their issues. I don't think I'm going to let myself be handicapped by him, despite him being such a great player. Because right now, LeBron as a GM is not that great. So, you know, if he's going to bring in guys that don't mesh well and can't play well with them, then you got to rethink why he's bringing in these guys, or who are the guys that he really wants to bring in. How would you approach this offseason if LeBron opts out of the contract?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious, you know, especially back in 2010 when LeBron joined forces with Wade and Bosch down in Miami. It takes a little bit of time for, you know, guys to mesh and really get, you know, what you want out of a team when you're putting together 3 superstar talents, just to feel, you know, how everyone's going to react to what. Kyrie Irving, obviously, you know, used to having the ball in his hands a lot more often. Love, even in Minnesota, a lot of the offense ran through him, even when they had Ricky Rubio and Pekovic and all those other guys around him there as well. So I think, you know, obviously there was a time when they were under 500, but they were able to rattle off quite a few wins, even with LeBron missing some time, Kyrie missing some time. It wasn't really until the playoffs that Love got hurt. And I don't think it was necessarily a hindrance for the Cavs, because obviously we were able to see Thompson come in and step up, even Mozgov, get a little more, you know, touches inside without Love being there. So I think the Cavs do have a good roster. If they were to lose Love, I don't know, you know, what type of impact it would really have on the team, because there's other guys that they could possibly go out and sign to put around LeBron, because obviously their bench was not very deep in this playoff, and that's where they really ran into a lot of trouble. Irving will be back. You don't know what type of player he will be next year, you know, recovering from a broken kneecap. But I think that Love will probably be gone, in my opinion. I don't think he'll be back next year. Just like you said, he didn't really mesh well with LeBron. You know, they were buddy-buddy with him bringing him in, but it didn't really play out that way, where LeBron didn't even say that those guys on the team were considered his friends. So that's kind of hard for you as a GM to listen to a guy and say, okay, you know, I want this guy to be brought onto the roster, and then in the end say that he's not even a guy that you talk to on a regular basis, even though you're in practice with him every day or games with him every day. So that was a bit of an issue. I myself thought it was a mistake. I thought Wiggins would have been a better guy to pair with LeBron. You know, it would have kept the roster a lot younger. And with having athletic wing players, it's kind of the way that, you know, the NBA is turning. Look at Golden State. You know, they have Curry, Thompson, Harrison Barnes, Iguodala. You know, those are athletic wing players. And I think that Cleveland made a mistake by going with Love over Wiggins.
And for me, you know, I would rather have a young guy grow up playing with LeBron and learning rather than bringing in another veteran who is going to kind of have his own style already. He's going to have his own expectations. You know, you could have brought Wiggins in and just let him, you know, given him to the, you know, just basically do whatever he needed to do just to get LeBron going. So, you know, I thought that was I didn't think that was the greatest of moves. I also, when you look at the salary issue, you know, Wiggins would have been a lot more cost effective for the next 3 or 4 seasons. Now, I know that those contracts do escalate and they can get a little high, especially for a number one draft pick, but it would have been much better paying him a fraction of the amount that Love was going to get. So, yeah, I think financially and from a basketball standpoint, that was definitely a mistake by the Cavs and most notably LeBron James. So we've got the Blackhawks winning in 6. We've got the Golden State Warriors winning in 6. NBA and NHL is done. Major League Baseball is in swing. We are, 3 weeks away right now from the All-Star break. I mean, season is just flying by already. But I wanted to get in. 2 weeks ago, we talked about the AFC East. And so I wanted to touch back and start covering some more of the NFL divisions. And I wanted to take a look at the NFC East today. So we've got the 4 teams: Dallas Cowboys, New York Giants, Philadelphia Eagles, Washington Redskins. Right now, the favorite to win the division on betdsi.eu is the Dallas Cowboys at +109, followed by the Eagles at +166. The Giants are third at +336, and the Redskins are +1621. So let's take a look. Let's work this order backwards. Washington is 16-1 odds to win the NFC East. They had a lot of issues on defense last year. We all know about the issues they have at the quarterback position and have a lot of questions if RG3 is going to be the quarterback, if he's going to be any good at quarterback. You know, they have a lot of questions to answer there. This is Jay Gruden's second year coaching the team. There was some speculation late last season that he was going to get canned despite getting a big contract. That didn't happen, but I don't feel like the Redskins are any better right now than they were a year ago, maybe even 2 years ago, when everything was kind of falling apart with Mike Shanahan at the helm. I don't think the Redskins have any kind of chance here to win the division. Do you have any would you be willing to put a 16-1 bet down on them to win the NFC East?
No, I don't think the Redskins have a shot whatsoever. I'm not even really sure about the Eagles with all the moves that they've made this offseason, how good they're going to be. I think it'll come down to the Giants possibly, having one of those miracle runs. Or the Cowboys, they've had some moves that they've made this summer as well. So you don't really know how that, division is going to play out. I kind of like the Giants myself, at that plus 336. So that's who my money would probably be on. But again, there's still moves to be made heading into the season. I just don't think with the Eagles, with the moves that they've made, I don't think that they're going to be, right where everybody thinks they're going to be. And the Redskins, I think, are just a lost cause for the next few seasons.
Yeah, Tony Romo, stayed healthy for the most part throughout last season, but I don't have a lot of faith that he's going to be able to make it through another campaign, especially after, all of the back issues that he's had. And just it seems like there was a lot of lingering things last season that he was able to play through. I don't know if he's going to be as lucky this year. With the Redskins, just to put that into perspective, when I say 16-1, over under 6 games for them to win this season. So that's a pretty low win total. You can take the over at minus 130. You can take the under at plus 110. So a few people are picking the Redskins to win a couple extra games there, but I don't know if they can win more than 6 games. I don't have their schedule in front of me, so I'm not sure which divisions they're playing, but it's going to be tough for them to get a divisional win here. I don't feel that good about Jay Gruden. I didn't like his offense that much in Cincinnati. I mean, he had one of the top wide receivers in the league. He had some of the better running backs in the league, but that Cincinnati offense never did a whole lot for me. They had spurts, they had some big games here and there, but I wasn't that big on it. So Washington, I think I'd be taking under 6 right now, definitely not taking them 16-1. You mentioned the Giants. I kind of do like the Giants here because they're in their second year of that new offensive system that they put in place last season. They have these young wide receivers that are getting better. They have Eli Manning is always going to be somewhat of a question mark, but I feel like they've done a decent job somewhat retooling and somewhat just kind of like just doing slight improvements on their defense. Things that are just good enough to get you a little better, but maybe the difference between the 20th-ranked defense and the 15th-ranked defense is a couple extra wins in the grand scheme of things, as long as everything is firing right correctly on offense. So the Giants, I thought, showed some good spurts last year. Right now they're at 8 wins is the over-under win total right now. So the over is at minus 145, under is at plus 125. I think I do like the Giants for over 8. Again, that is without doing a whole lot of research on their schedule for this season. The other teams we have, Dallas, over, under, 9.5. Looks like the over is being favored slightly right now at minus 135. Under is at plus 115. They lost to Marco Murray. They've lost some, big-time defensive linemen over the last couple of seasons. They did sign Greg Hardy, but that's kind of in question if he's going to be available or not. Without Marco Murray, I don't know if they can get enough out of their running game to really take off a lot of pressure on Romo, which is why I was really surprised that they didn't really seem to add anybody back after he left. What are you projecting for the Cowboys running game? Do you have anything you like out of it? Do you think that offensive line is good enough that it doesn't really matter who they plug in? What are your thoughts on Romo and his need of a running game?
I think they beefed up the offensive line last year, which is kind of why they felt like losing DeMarco Murray wouldn't hurt as much. But I think DeMarco Murray had a lot more talent in him than, they're giving him credit for. So I think the running game is going to be hindered a little bit. I know Dez Bryant, from reading reports, isn't necessarily happy in Dallas either, even talking about sitting out games if he has to. So I think the offense down there is going to be a little rattled. Like you said, you know, you never really know if Romo is going to be able to last a full season or not. So I don't think that, you know, the offense is going to be as potent as it was last year, but we'll see what happens. I think, you know, the running game will falter a little bit, but there's a possibility with the line that they have, like we said, that they could plug somebody in there and get, you know, good usage out of them. But I think that, you know, the offense is going to be a problem for them this year, more than what they anticipated when they let Murray walk.
Does Bryant skipping games would be stupid because he's franchised. So if you're skipping games, wasn't it with Vincent Jackson a few years ago where if you sat out, you had to sit out 10 games? It was kind of like, it's not like you could just sit out a game or two. It was 10 games or none. So, you know, that'd be pretty bold of him if he sat that out. That's a lot of money, you know. I don't care if you want a long-term deal or not. Let's say a guy like Dez Bryant got injured. Do you think he'd have problems getting a contract next year?
It's a possibility. You know, he is getting a little older. He has had some issues himself, but especially in this case, you know, being more of a attitude thing because he's not happy with his pay, that, you know, it'd be a little less likely that the contender would go after him and give him that bigger contract. He might end up with a team that's not really on the verge of, you know, winning a Super Bowl every year like a lot of people predict the Cowboys are going to do.
Mm-hmm. So the last team in the East, and I think we both have about the same feeling on them, Philadelphia. Right now the win total is at 9.5. The under is being favored. Now, all the other three teams in the division are all slight favorites on the over. The Eagles are on the under at -130. You can take over 9.5 wins at +110. I don't see them getting 10 wins unless Sam Bradford stays healthy and actually lives up to the number one pick potential that he has. The DeMarco Murray thing I like, but I'm a little confused on their style of offense, how they're going to run that, especially with Sam Bradford. So I don't see 9.5 happening. And it seems like a lot of guys are getting pissed off and wanting to leave. And they have no problem cutting guys. The guard that was cut late last week, I can't think of his name, but he, you know, pretty good guard. And I know the guards in the NFL tend to get a little overpaid for what they do. And really, you don't want to have bad offensive line play. But when you have a really good stud on the offensive line, I don't see a point in I just don't see a point in cutting them loose, because you need to protect that quarterback. You need to open up running lanes. So it's really important that you get your offensive line right. Chip Kelly just doesn't seem to care if he pisses off his players. And I like that about him. But at the same time, there's a point where you have to really appreciate what these guys are doing for you. So, you know, they took a small step backwards last season. This year could be a really big step back. You know, we're seeing that after losing DeSean Jackson, the plug and play at wide receiver just isn't quite the same in the NFL. You know, there's a you can get decent receivers. You don't have to always be drafting them in the first round, but there comes to a point where you can't just plug in any bum on the outside and expect him to produce. And we saw that kind of become an issue this past season with the Eagles. I think it's going to continue. So, you know, I would be going under 9.5 here. And there's no way I would be playing anything on them to win the division right now. Especially, it's only +166. So it's not like you're even getting that good of a payout if you do bet, and you're tying that one up for 6 months. So, you know, that's another way you have to kind of evaluate if you're going to be playing anything on the win totals or any of the division or the odds to win the Super Bowl conference. You know, all of those long-term futures, you have to really be thinking about, is this worth tying up money for 6 months? Now, the Giants plus 336, I think that is the most logical play for the odds to win the NFC East. Reason I say that, you're getting a decent payout. You're getting a little over 3-1 on it. And I do like what I saw out of the Giants last year. I think they're going to get better. And they don't have to get – and the rest of the division, I think, is going to regress. You know, maybe not a whole lot, but maybe just enough for the Giants to squeak in there. So, right now, Giants plus 336 is the way I am leaning for the odds to win the NFC East. We will see how that rolls out. So, Catracho, do you have any other soccer plays for us today, in the upcoming days, or this weekend? I know we've got MLS on tap now. So, what are you looking to play the rest of the week?
Yeah, there's one other game that I have going tonight down in the Copa America with Brazil versus Colombia. Colombia had a poor showing and were beat by Venezuela, surprisingly, in the first game. Brazil won their first matchup. I'm looking for Brazil to continue their streak, kind of, you know, shake off the rust that they had in the last game and that they've had over their last few games, even though they've won. But really, you know, take it to Colombia, which a lot of people were surprised they beat last year in the World Cup because Colombia had been so hot. But I like Brazil tonight, and then I have Venezuela over Peru tomorrow night as well in the Copa America. And we'll be taking a look at the Women's World Cup knockout stages that will be coming up and MLS this weekend. So be on the lookout for those tweets.
Very good. So, yeah, guys, make sure you are following him on Twitter, at the Catracho, C-A-T-R-A-C-H-O. And I will be retweeting him whenever I can. So make sure you're also following Cover That Spread, at Cover That, or spelled S-P-R-D. So for the Red Light Sports Network and Cover That Spread, he is the Catracho, I-M-J-A. Good luck betting, and may the spread be forever in your favor, guys. Take care.